Stand by. Transmitting sound. Download complete. Now launching audio stream. The Kelly Alexander Show.
We're delighted to welcome a true Canadian talent to the show who continues to have a career that spans the globe. Deborah Cox is a Juno Award-winning artist who's made an impact in the worlds of R&B and dance, as well as being a celebrated Broadway performer. She's here to talk about her new album and heading back to Broadway as the legendary Josephine Baker. Multi-instrumentalist and singer-songwriter Patrick Lehman is back with a new single called Games, and we wrap things up with pop alternative artist Anna Arin from Switzerland and her latest album called Neuro.
Capture your need for sound.
It's a real thrill for us to welcome Canadian music royalty, Juno Award-winning recording artist Deborah Cox to the show. Deborah has had a stellar music career, garnering 12 number one hit singles on Billboard's Hot Dance chart, as well as picking up tons of awards and also expanding her career as an actress and appearing on Broadway. Deborah, welcome to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Thank you. Thank you, Kelly. Hope all is well with you.
Everything is great. It's so great to have you on our program. And I wanted to ask you, you know, right off the top, if I could take you back to when you were a kid. Did you know that a career in music and entertainment was where you were headed in life?
I had a feeling. I mean, at a pretty young age. By the time I was 6 or 7, I mean, I was singing anything that came on the radio. I was singing commercial jingles, singing around the house to, you know, music that my parents played. So I knew that it was something that I wanted to get into. I just didn't know how I was going to go about doing it.
Was it a challenge getting noticed in Canada back in the 90s for the kind of music that you were producing, R&B and sort of dance music?
Right, yeah. I mean, it was difficult. I mean, a lot of the labels at the time didn't have a really big, soul R&B department, you know, and so it was difficult to get some support. I mean, in the street, it was cool because, you know, we're able to perform and do shows with, you know, live bands and that kind of thing. But it was just, there wasn't a whole lot of support at radio at the time. So I don't know if the labels really knew what to do. I think over time, as more artists, you know, became more present and prevalent, you know, in the industry, I think it's garnered a lot more support now. So, you know, it's been a long road, but, you know, we all learn and benefit from our struggles.
Was it a difficult or challenging decision to make that decision to head down to the States to advance your career, or were you sort of ready to go?
Yeah, I mean, it was a little bit of both. I mean, I think if it happened there, I would have absolutely, you know, stayed. But, you know, you go where the work is. You know, you go where you're valued and celebrated, and you go where people get it. And at the time, I was touring. I was doing a lot of stuff with Celine Dion at the time and Rock Was In. And I was just, you know, networking, you know, and getting my demo played and heard by many different executives all over, you know, was a way to just kind of break the mold and get out of the same old, same old. And, you know, once we garnered the interest from Clive Davis, I mean, that's a call you want to take, you know?
Would you consider your first big break was getting that call from Clive?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, he really understood, you know, the direction and understood what kind of artist I wanted to be. He knew that it was going to take great music. It was going to take great songwriters and producers to be in my stable. And it was going to take you know, money for promotion and marketing. And he was the one that was willing to do that and take that chance and give me the opportunity. And so not shortly after discussing, you know, what type of album we wanted to put together, we were in Los Angeles, you know, writing and producing and also listening to songs from, you know, great musical, you know, legends like Babyface and Dallas Austin, and, you know, he put us in those circles. And, you know, we all know in this business, it's about the circle of people that you're in, that you're with, you know, whether they can make things happen or not.
What do you feel about the way R&B is going now? Because if we look back to the mid-90s when you know, we sort of, you know, first heard you, Who Do You Love, and all the other great tracks that you had coming out, I remember even watching that video and being so inspired, just that sound that was coming out of the States with that R&B sound. And then we sort of fast forward, you know, and R&B sort of, I think, went away after we sort of left the early 2000s. And now I kind of feel like it's coming back. Are you thinking that R&B is in a healthy position? And do you feel a responsibility to sort of get it back up to where it needs to be?
Well, I mean, for me, I've always been the type of artist that has stayed, you know, tried to stay authentic, if you will. So I don't feel a huge responsibility, only in the sense that I'm doing what I feel most represents me. And I think as long as I do that, then that's, you know, contributing something to the industry that is authentic. And I think every artist has to find that within themselves. You know, we're in changing times and music is different. And I think every year music is going to be different. It's always evolving. Art is always evolving. So we find ourselves coming back to something that's a little more nostalgic. I mean, when you listen to Bruno Mars and listen, I mean, he's doing funk, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. You listen to all these new records that are quote unquote pop, you know, they're reaching back. And I think, you know, that's important, you know, as an artist, to always sort of keep that in mind, to always remember and also be inspired by artists that were there before us. And you know, and again, for me, that's always what it's been about. It's just making sure that what I do is true to me. And I think people get a sense of that when they hear the music.
Something that I love about you is that you're not only able to do R&B music, but then you sort of head into the dance realm, which I know is similar, but obviously it's got, you know, other elements going on. What do your dance fans mean to you, especially, I would say, the gay community, because they've totally embraced you, and I know you do a lot of events for their pride events and stuff. Is it like a whole different world being in the dance realm?
Yeah, I mean, that in itself, the whole dance music, dance, EDM, LGBTQ community, that's a whole other... that's a whole other genre, you know, in the way that you have soul and you have, it's all very, very different. I think for me, in the way that it started, it started very organically. I think the community really gravitated to the subject matters that I was singing about, and they found some kind of common ground with the things that I was singing about. And then once they started to hear those stories, you know, told in a dance, you know, format, you know, with that four on the floor, something that they can connect an emotion to while they were dancing on the dance floor, I think it just became an overwhelmingly positive, you know, thing where they just completely embraced me. And so much so that now every song that I have out, literally, they want a dance remix, you know. So I'm constantly telling my dance audience that, you know, not every song needs to be, you know, remixed, but, you know, they still insist on it. So I try to please as much as I can. But I think the thing with that community is that I've been in the trenches with them. I've done the clubs, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 in the morning. I've done the circuit parties and I've done the prides. And I've been there while they were on this journey, while a lot of them were trying to come out, while a lot of them were trying to, you know, find their own identity. And I think with my music, they found their identity. And a lot of them have said that, you know, that this, a lot of, you know, my songs have been a soundtrack to their life, you know, so that really resonates with me. And I try to make sure that I continue to connect with the audience in that way.
I wanted to ask you, I interviewed Cece Peniston not that long ago, and I remember her talking about her relationship with the gay community and how she sort of calls them her best girlfriends, and she knows that that they're always going to be with her. Do you feel like no matter what, you're always going to have that community behind you? Because I just feel like they are the most loyal fans on the planet.
They really are. I mean, they're the most loyal, but they're also the most temperamental, too. So, I mean, if you do something that doesn't resonate with them, they will, you know, keep it moving and move on to something else. I think they also have a very keen sense of, like I said, authenticity. And I think, you know, through my travels all over the world, meeting different people, I think that they found a connection with me in the sense that, you know, I'm telling their stories, you know, from a place of truth. And I think that's what they connect to. And that's why they've been, you know, you know, great supporters for such a long time. And I've often heard them compare me to, you know, Diana Ross or Madonna or these legendary women who have in some way had that connection. And I think that's what it is. You know, I think it's more than the music. I think it's, you know, the stories that resonate with them through the Broadway shows. I think it's the stories that resonate through, you know, the jazz music that I've done and through the dance music and the R&B. You know, I think it's really the storytelling and in the way that I connect with them when I'm singing the story.
Joining us on the show is Juno Award-winning and Grammy-nominated artist Deborah Cox. Make sure to check out her website, deborahcox.com. I'm going to get back to your music in just a sec, Deborah, but I wanted to ask you about, you know, the recent situation with the Whitney movie and the fact that, you know, it was directed, her directorial debut, by Angela Bassett, who I know you're good friends with. Was it exciting when she gave you the call to be involved with this and then to have this challenge of re-recording these classic Whitney tunes?
Oh, yeah. I mean, Angela has... You know, this was her directorial debut, and she had a great team of people, you know, that she, you know, chose to do the music. You know, Dick Rudolph, who's a very well-respected producer and musician, was also a part of the team. And they had pretty much the script, you know, was done already. They had already gotten in production. And when I got the call, it was to, you know, do the five songs. And she really wanted to make sure that the songs resonated and matched what was going on in the story. And so, you know, that's what I found myself doing, was, you know, going in there and really, you know, taking direction from her as far as what, you know, the approach would, or what the approach should be, as I'm watching, you know, the songs being portrayed, you know, on stage. It was a pretty challenging task, you know, because I had to put on, you know, the voice actress hat, you know, as opposed to being Deborah Cox, you know, in the studio. So it was many minds that went into, you know, the performance.
Now, I know there was a lot of press dedicated to the fact that the Houston family themselves weren't entirely happy about the movie being made. Was that a challenge for you to carry on with it anyway? And what do you think Whitney herself would have thought of the movie?
Well, for me, my relationship with her was professional. I mean, we'd see each other at award shows. We'd see each other at different events, being label mates and friends. And whenever she came to Miami, we always kind of hook up or whatever. I mean, so our relationship was very specific. And so there were moments where I got, actually many moments where I got a chance to be one-on-one with her, and we'd have discussions outside of the music. And those are the memories that I think about when I think about Whitney and when I think about my approach to the film. And it was purely from a place of wanting to honor her and you know, show her or remind people of her legacy and her music and what she meant to people.
Now, I wanted to ask you as well, you know, you come from a class, I think, of artists that have done so much. You know, you, Whitney,
right.
Mariah, Janet, and so many of the youngsters, if I can call them that, I think look up to you.
Wow.
Yeah, and, you know, I'm so happy that you're still doing your thing. I think a lot of us hope Janet Jackson comes back and does her thing, too. And,
yes,
and you know,
yes.
Mariah, what do you think your place is in R&B music history then, coming from that class of 90s artists who I think are still so celebrated today? Like, all of the youngsters, I think, need to say, you guys helped pave the way.
Right. Well, I find myself in the same position. I mean, when I first started out, I celebrated Whitney and I celebrated Patti and Gladys and, you know, all these great, you know, divas, Jody Watley and Janet Jackson. I mean, those were my heroes, you know, and so now I understand the position that I'm in. Now I'm someone else who's coming up. I'm their hero. So I can only hope that I'm continuing to live up to that that position, you know, by continuing to do, you know, good music. And honestly, with social media, I get a dose of it every single day when they hit me up on Twitter or on Facebook and let me know that they like a song or they don't like a song. You know, people let you know right away nowadays, you know. And that's, I think, the beauty of being able to stay connected with the fans and stay connected to people that continue to support you. It's very edifying. And, you know, I love that you, you know, you put me in the class of, you know, Whitney and Janet and Mariah, these people who have made a mark in the industry. And, you know, for whatever it's worth, I'm so proud of all the accomplishments. You know, the song Nobody's Supposed to Be Here still was the longest running number one R&B song, and having, you know, 12 number one dance records, and being able to touch people's lives in a way that this career has given me such an amazing platform to touch people and travel all over the world. It's a blessing, and to still be here in 2015 doing my thing, like you said, and have a loving family and great support. It's more than I could have asked for. So I'm very, very thankful and grateful.
Is it important for you to know and have the support of your Canadian fans? Because again, I know you live in the States now, but you are from here. And I do mean it. I think you are Canadian royalty, because we don't really have anyone apart from you who's done such amazing things in the genre of music that you do. Do you feel the love still coming from home, and do you miss home?
I do. I mean, I don't live in Toronto, but I live in Miami. But I celebrate where I come from. I'm always waving the Canadian flag, because I love our culture. I love how our society has always been open and has been always always progressive. You know, the Canadians are progressive just by nature. You know, and even, you know, I get back usually, you know, in the summer and on holidays. I mean, having a family now, it's a little different, because now my own children are in school, and so I've got to make sure that they are in their routine. But when I do get a chance to, you know, really celebrate, you know, my Canadian roots, I absolutely do. I mean, it's the fiber of my being, you know, it's who I am. And it's so funny, because, you know, both me and my husband, who are Canadians, we stick out like sore thumbs because of just that, our standards, our integrity, our progressiveness. You know, people just know, you aren't from here, are you? You're like, no, we're Canadian. And the fact that we're so nice, we still get that. Oh, you're so nice.
That's amazing. I have to get to you about your, you know, your new album. You've got new music on the way. And I want to ask you about the single as well, More Than I Knew. But first of all, what can you tell us about the new album that I think is coming our way in a very short period of time?
Yes. Late summer, we're looking at it. We're just putting the finishing touches on a few songs right now. We're just putting the finishing touches on the video for More Than I Knew as well. But this album is celebrating, you know, the soul, celebrating the song, celebrating melody and lyric, you know, getting back to the emotion of music. And that's where I started from. That's the school of that's where I came from, you know. And like you said, you know, going back to artists like Mariah and Whitney and Janet and these great songstresses that also had music that you can dance to, that's really where this music is going back to. And I call this album a work of art, because I feel like, you know, there's messages in the music as well. It's not preachy, but I think there's moments in song where you get to connect to, you know, a positive message rather than just speaking about a relationship. There are a few songs on there that actually speak to yourself, which can be like daily mantras, you know? I still stay true to that. I feel like, again, like, this is my platform. This is my opportunity to put out something good in the world and to put out some good positive messages out there, you know? And that's my mission. That's my mission.
The single More Than I Knew, was it an easy decision to release that as a single, or, you know, and is it your favorite track on the album?
Man, there's so many really, really good gems on this record, and it's really tough to just be, you know, just to focus on one. But I'd like to say that each song, I think, just like we have, you know, when you send a message on Facebook, it's like for that specific moment. I feel like each song is just like that. Every song is for a very specific moment in time, or a moment, you know, reflective of something. The song More Than I Knew is reflective of, you know, someone, you know, not regretting, but just really thinking about the relationship or thinking about what they had. And, you know, we all have those aha moments, whether it's in life or in a relationship, where you sit back and think, and you just, you know, think with gratitude, like, wow, look how far I've come, and look where I am now. And, you know, I think there are times where you need a moment to just really, you know, reflect. You know, the title track, Work of Art, is a song that talks about recognizing just what a work of art you are. Each of us have those moments where we doubt ourselves. But Work of Art is that song that you can listen to and just remind yourself, you know, just, you know, how great of a person you are. Like, you're beautifully made, and, you know, it's we all have a purpose, and it's a deeper purpose than sometimes we even know, you know. So there's a lot of different songs on there that, you know, can make you reflect.
Are you going to have time to tour? Because I know that you're actually heading back to Broadway. So how are you going to get this all done?
I know, it's a lot. It's a lot. I think, you know, I try to do as much as I can as a project is happening. And I've been doing a lot of spot dates and festivals and prides. You know, there's a lot of those that are coming up over the summer. We'll see about a tour. I don't know. I'm not sure about a full tour just yet, because of the timeline that I do have, you know, with this commitment with Josephine that's coming to Broadway again. So I would just say continue to check the socials, and I'll keep you informed as things unveil.
Well, I selfishly hope you do come up to Montreal and to Toronto and and all that sort of stuff. And
I hope so too.
We'd love to have you back up here at home in Canada. Before I let you go, though, I just wanted to quickly ask you about Josephine. You know, it's this Broadway show that's based on the legendary Josephine Baker. How did you get involved in the project, and how long is your commitment to it?
Well, my commitment right now for the show, I mean, we've done workshops for the Josephine Baker story about 4 years ago, and a lot of people don't understand the process of a Broadway show is that it goes through different readings, and then you do like a presentation for theaters and producers, and then from there, you've got to wait in the queue for your timeline to come up as far as it actually going to Broadway. So this has been in the process for a very long time, and we'll be doing an out-of-town run in Sarasota, Florida, at the beautiful Osmo Theater. And then from there, it'll go to Broadway, and it's for a limited time. So we're not sure of the timeline, how long it will run, but that is the plan right now for 2016. It's, you know, the story of Josephine Baker, who is this amazing philanthropist, a visionary, a dancer, singer, actress who spoke seven languages, who, you know, made many, many, gosh, groundbreaking things in her time, being the only Black woman to be such a huge, famous icon out in Europe, who literally left poverty in St. Louis to go and find a better life and be a better... her view and her mission and her vision was to show that many people of different cultures could live together. And so that was one of her motivations. One of her motivations was to adopt many different children from all over the world. And these were children who were basically orphans. And she was just this amazing woman. So it focuses on 5 years of her life. And so we'll be showing her life on the stage.
We cannot wait to see you back on Broadway. And yeah. I guess my last question to you is, you know, you seem like a triple threat, even more than that. You know, you're singing, you're on Broadway, you're acting as well. What more can we expect from Deborah Cox? Because I just know, like, I love that when I look at you, when I see you on TV doing interviews, I just know there's always something else going on. Like, you are still so determined. What else do you want to achieve, Deborah? Because it seems like you've conquered so much.
Thank you. I mean, for me, it's about the projects that I'm passionate about and that resonate with me. And, you know, I think, you know, the only thing that I haven't done, you know, a film in a long time. That would be fun to do. But again, it has to be the right thing, you know? It has to be the right movie or the right story or the right, you know, thing that resonates. And again, that Josephine Baker story was such a rich story that, you know, I had to, you know, make sure that I got involved with that. And so when they called, it was like literally a dream come true, because I'd been following that woman's legacy and her story for a very, very long time. Literally on tour with Rock Voisin, when we'd stop in Paris, you know, I'd see all of the, you know, the remnants of her legacy, you know, at the Moulin Rouge or, you know, on the Champs-Élysées. There's a lot of wonderful, just great history in her story and her mark that she left in France. And we'd go to Toulouse and Montpellier and all these wonderful cities that were full and rich of her legacy. So, man, if this turns into a film or turns into something else, I mean, that would be awesome for, you know, so we'll put it out there.
Excellent. Well, we love you to pieces. We're so proud of you up here in Canada. And I know I have a lot of my listeners that are listening around the world that love you as well. So we wish you all the best of luck. And thank you.
Thanks for the support.
Thank you
for the love and support.
Awesome. Thank you. That's a Juno Award-winning recording artist and actress and Broadway star, Deborah Cox. Make sure to check out her website, deborahcox.com.
Hey, hey. Oh, this is your girl, Deborah Cox, and you're hanging out with Kelly Alexander.
I gave you my heart on a platter. It was stupid. I gave you my life like it mattered. But you took it. And all the people tell me that it's gonna take time. But time feels like forever when you ain't by my side. I was young and foolish for breaking the spell. And now it just feels like I'm guilting myself. I found every reason to spin this around. Oh, why I missed out so much more than I ever loved you. I'm better at meeting you now than when I had you. Oh, I know I complain, but you're all that.
happy to welcome back to the show a Canadian multi-instrumentalist, singer-songwriter, and producer. Patrick Lehman joins me to talk about his new single, Games, that is coming out very shortly, and all that's been going on with him since the last time we spoke. Patrick, thanks for joining us again on The Kelly Alexander Show.
Hey, Kelly. Thanks for having me.
So the last time we spoke, I did my research and checked, and it was in early 2013. So I wanted to ask you since that time, because it's been about 2 years, what would you say has been the biggest peak and valley with regards to your career since that time?
Yeah, well, since we last spoke, there's been, you know, a lot of things have had, probably more things have developed in that time than, you know, before we've spoken. I put my record out in Canada, and then I put it out overseas in Netherlands and Luxembourg and a few other countries. And I got the chance to go on tour there. I've actually been there twice since we spoke and done a few, you know, big festivals and venues over there. So that I'd probably say would be the highlight. And then just by being there, just meeting so many different artists and working with people in the industry over there, just really, you know, having doors open for me. Not just in Canada, but overseas as well.
Was there any thoughts that you would actually maybe relocate over there?
I've thought about it. I mean, I've done some recording over there since we've spoken last. So, you know, I've definitely spent some time there. I'm not sure if I'd relocate just yet, but I wouldn't say no.
Now, could you actually, you know, for people who don't know your sound, can you explain your sound and why you think it translates so well overseas?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's what's funny. I didn't, before my music got over there and then I got opportunities to go perform and whatnot, I didn't know that, you know, they were into kind of funky, soulful pop type of stuff that they are. I mean, especially in the Netherlands, they're really big on that. It's kind of a mix of, you know, a lot of my influences are, 1960s, even 1950s kind of soul pop music, a lot of Motown, that kind of thing. And then I also like, you know, a lot of rock and roll and that kind of stuff. So I try to, you know, mix the two together. I call it electric soul. That's kind of my genre that I'm trying to develop for myself.
Can you actually talk to us a little bit about your love of hip hop, jazz and soul and how you've sort of managed to fuse together that sound? Because it's really cool. Like, it does sound different, I would say, than a lot of other artists out there.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think as a benefit and also sometimes as a hardship, it's, I do have a lot of different influences. I studied jazz for many years in university, and that's kind of where that came from. And, you know, hip-hop, I grew up listening to lots of hip-hop, whether it was Missy Elliott or, you know, back in the day, Puff Daddy or Biggie or that kind of thing. And so, I mean, my goal is kind of just always to never be scared to combine all of my influences and somehow in that mix, you know, hopefully find my own sound. So I think it really is just pulling from a lot of random different styles of music and artists and just trying to create my own sound.
Now, talk to us about the new single, Games. You know, what's the influence behind it and what do you want people to take from it?
Yeah, well, the new song, Games, it's coming out on April 28th. I'm super excited about it. It's sort of, I would say it probably sounds a little bit like 1950s doo-wop, but with a pop touch, sort of. It's the topic of the song is basically, you know, being in a relationship and, you know, all the ups and downs and, you know, getting to a point where, you know, either we're going to work on this or we're going to quit each other because, you know, I don't want to play games. I don't want to go back and forth and do all those things that happen sometimes when you're in a rocky relationship. So, but the sound of the song is kind of very upbeat and it's sort of, so I've kind of made it a tongue-in-cheek type of thing. And like I said, the sound of the music is very kind of soulful, 1950s, 1960s doo-wop influenced.
Now, when you look at all your influences, is there somebody that sticks out like the most? Like I would, you know, if it was me, because, you know, I've done some singing in the past. I love like all the people you sort of mentioned, like Missy Elliott and all those people for sure. TLC, the list goes on. But I always know that I go back to Janet Jackson. Who do you go back to?
Yeah. That's funny, actually. My first concert was TLC when they came to Montreal like many, many years ago. I don't want to say when. I don't even know if I remember when, but it was a great concert and Left Eye was a part of it, so it was cool. I think I always go back to kind of like 90s hip-hop as far as rhythmical patterns and drum beats and that kind of thing. As far as, you know, vocals and maybe just the overall sound of the music, Stevie Wonder is my number one. I love Sly Stone, who's another you know, great artist from the 60s and 70s. Lauryn Hill, her album, I think, is still probably at the top of my list because that's another album where I'd say, you know, there was a lot of styles mixed in, but it still sort of was a soulful, urban type of sound. So those are probably artists that I can always put on and get inspired. And I'll still listen to them now and hear things that I've never heard before and, you know, instrumentation or a lyric or, you know, something that will kind of spark an idea.
Now, I want to ask you this because, you know, for example, if I compare you to Eminem for just a second, which you're probably like, what? But
I'll take it.
Very good. Now, my comparison would be this, like, and I, first of all, I think that obviously anybody can do any type of music. You know, you can be any shade of color and do whatever shade of you know, music. But obviously, yeah. I think certain groups fall into doing, you know, more this type of music than other types of music. So, you know, when Eminem came out, I think a lot of people were surprised just how well he handled the rap genre. And again, it shouldn't matter what color he is. But do you feel like there's a bit of an added pressure because you don't, you know, quote unquote, fit the norm of the type of music that you do?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I was talking to somebody else about this, and as crazy as it might sound, I've never really given a lot of thought to it until now. I'm kind of realizing now more and more how much that matters to certain people. For me, I just always say that, you know, I gravitated towards R&B and soul music from a very young age, and up until now, it's still my favorite style. I love, you know, I'm influenced, like I said before, by a lot of different types of music and artists, but that's just always the music that felt most comfortable to me and that I was happiest making. And I do agree. I think a lot of people can do a lot of different styles. And so, you know, I mean, I think it's just a frame of mind. Like for me, it doesn't really, you know, I like to see individuals, and especially in artists, I like to look at artists as individuals. So, you know, if somebody likes my music, they like my music. If they're not going to listen to me because I'm white, then, you know, I don't know if there's anything I can do to change that. I just kind of have to be myself and try to stay true to the music. And especially with a song like Games, that, you know, to me, when I'm writing music, I hear the song in my head first, and then I sort of have to try to figure out how to get it out on the piano, and then, you know, you arrange the music, and you produce it, and you write the lyrics. So when I kind of hear a full song already in my head, and I have to try to work it out, I mean, you know, I can, it's kind of already fully produced. I just have to record it, basically. So for me to try to take a song and then try to change that style, and for me, I feel like it's already fully composed and kind of ready to go. You know, I, like I said before, it's just a matter of staying true to that song and to my style and my biggest influences. So I'm not too stressed about it. Like I said, you know, if someone's going to write me off because they don't like the color of my skin, well then, you know, to each his own. I like to look at artists and see them as individuals and listen to them for their music. So I'm hoping that people will do the same.
Joining us on the Kelly Alexander Show is singer-songwriter and producer Patrick Lehman. Make sure to check out his website, patricklehmanmusic.com. This might be an odd question, but I'm always interested to hear the answer. If you could switch places with any artist right now just for a day or for a week, who would that be and why?
Oh, that's a good question. Who would I switch places with? Well, off the top of my head right now, I would probably say either, that's a good one. I'd probably maybe like Rihanna.
That's
just
good.
To see, because I feel like her life is so, I mean, you know, you see stuff on TV and on social media. Her life just seems like super ridiculous and exciting. Yeah, I don't know. I can't think of anybody else right now. Maybe Justin Bieber, just to see how ridiculous his life is.
Right. And who would you like to work with, Patrick? Like, obviously, I think you've worked with a lot of cool producers and so on. And obviously, you know, you doing a lot of it yourself as well. But is there someone out there, whether it's production-wise or even like another artist that you'd like to collaborate with? Is that something on the horizon you'd like to do?
Yeah, I'd love to. I haven't done a whole lot of collaborations so far. I was in Amsterdam a little while ago, actually working with some DJs and doing more songwriting and more producing, not necessarily for myself. And in the last couple of months, I also put out a track. There's a DJ called Big Bass that put out a track that I sang on, and I co-wrote some stuff on that too. But as far as collaborating with my own music, my own sound, I would love to, you know, if I can be so bold as to say, I would love to sing a duet with someone like Pink. I think her voice is super cool, and I think she's got sort of an organic type of voice, but she still lives in the pop world, which I find is super interesting. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you know, if I could ever meet or perform with Stevie Wonder or somebody, you know, one of those legendary artists like that, that would be, you know, a thrill.
Is it important for you, Patrick, to break big in the States? Because again, I think the type of music that you do can lend itself to that market. Obviously, I'm really happy it's going well overseas, because I think that's also another market that is embracing the type of sound that you do more and more. But like, I, you know, I've been able to interview so many artists, and I'm always curious to see if it's like high on their radar to go big or go home in the States.
Yeah, I mean, I would love to. That's for sure. I mean, a lot of my, you know, there's a lot of Canadian artists that I grew up listening to, and I still do, and I'm influenced by them. But obviously, I can't lie. A lot of the music that I've been influenced by has been American music, R&B music, soul music, even some urban stuff. So, yeah, I mean, I would love to make it big in the States. I've done a lot of performing in New York and kind of in eastern U.S. states. And other than that, I haven't been down there too much. I mean, I've thought about it, but it can be, you know, a big nut to crack, so to speak, you know. And so I think maybe the activity I've been doing overseas in the Netherlands and the UK has been exciting, because I think I can see that growing already and I can see that developing. So for me, I feel like there's a future there maybe first before I would go to the States. But yeah, it's definitely something that I aim to do in the next couple of years.
And what is up next for you? Obviously, we've got the single Games coming. Is there going to be like an EP or full-length album and lots of touring?
Yeah, well, I'm kind of thinking about that now. I definitely, you know, was really, really proud of this song. And like I said, I kind of had the whole idea for the production of it before I even sort of wrote the song. So it's, you know, that went very smoothly. I'm definitely working on stuff now. There should be something out maybe later on this year. There's no date or anything specific right now, but definitely something later on in the year to come.
Fantastic. Patrick, thank you so much for spending time with us. We really appreciate it.
Hey, thank you.
That was Patrick Lehman. Again, for more information, make sure to check out his website, patricklehmanmusic.com.
Hey, this is Patrick Lehman. You're hanging out with the Kelly Alexander Show, and this is my new song, Games.
Cause I'm just that kind of guy. I can't satisfy no one else, no matter how hard I try. Though I lie here wide awake, wondering why did I just make this mistake again this time? Cause you're just that kind of girl. You can't satisfy no one else in this holy dividing world. Though you lie here wide awake, wondering why did he just make a mistake again this time? By myself, cause I'm just that kind of guy. I can't satisfy no one else, no matter how hard I try. Though I like you wide away, wondering why did I just make this mistake again this time? Yeah, well, I cook for you, baby, I feel your soul.
To learning more about our next guest, pop alternative singer Anna Aaron, who hails from Switzerland. Anna recently released her sophomore album, Neuro, and she's here to let us know what it's all about. Anna, welcome to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Thank you so much. Hi.
So, Anna, to start things off, how would you actually describe your sound?
Well, I'm noticing that here everybody says it's alternative pop, and I'm really happy about that because in Switzerland there's like this kind of folk label attached to me that I can't seem to get rid of. And the new album is really a lot more electronic and very far away from folk music. So I think alternative pop is a lot better as a label.
Now, your latest album, as we mentioned, is called Neuro. Can you explain the title and what you want people to take away from the project?
Well, I call it Neuro because Neuro kind of stands for the net or the web, that maybe we could describe it as the web in terms of the internet, but also the web of our nerves in the body that are connected to the brain and everything. So I was kind of trying to explore the analogy between the internet and the human body. That sounds really weird.
No, it sounds good. It's very good. And, you know, as we're listening to the album, you know, is there an ebb and flow to it, or is it a collection of songs?
I think there are kind of like two sides, and one side was that science fiction William Gibson inspired thing, but there are also some songs that are very emotional, and it deals a lot with the issue of the pain of breakup also and loss and having to let go. So it's not entirely, it's not a science fiction record entirely. It also has a more organic side to it also.
I was reading some information and I wanted to know, how important is percussion to you with regards to this album? Because it feels like that's a big part of this sound that you're working on.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of rhythm in general. I think it's really important to know your rhythm, especially when you write songs and when you record. And I was very happy to work with David Costin and to be a bit more on the electronic beat side than just purely working with normal drums.
Now, do you have a favorite song on the album? I know that's hard to ask an artist, but is there one that pops out more than the others, or do different times mean different songs for you?
Yeah, definitely. That's definitely right. But I think I would say I'm a very big fan of the song Neuro Hunger because I was so relieved that it turned out so well and just exactly like I had imagined it, because it was a kind of a risky track. I had some crazy ideas with the gaps. I mean, yeah, the structure is rather complicated, and I was really happy that we were able to do it the way we did.
How does your writing process actually work? Because, again, we just talked about how important rhythm is to you. So is it important for you to get down, like, the instrumentation first, or do you write the lyrics first?
It kind of happens all at once, really. I also find that often the lyrics and the music, they really influence each other very much. When there's a melody in my head, it's almost always in connection with words also. And also the other way around. When I have words, it's often in connection with a kind of with a harmony or a feeling, of a musical feeling.
When do you write, Anna? Is it, you know, when you come off the road, or is it important for you to write at home? Like, do you have a place or a space, you know, that's where you create?
I have a small room in the apartment where I live, so it's I work at home in my music room, and it's nothing special. It's just a piano and a computer. And I sometimes record demos on the road, but mostly I just work at home.
Do you feel inspired when you come off the road to write more, like from the places you've seen and all that sort of stuff?
Yeah, I think it's definitely a good thing to, because traveling kind of helps you stay open. It sort of prevents you from getting too narrow-minded, because you're always meeting new people and seeing new places. And meeting new people is always also a kind of a challenge to kind of keep your heart open. So I think it's a good thing for an artist to move a lot, definitely.
Joining us on the show is Swiss artist Anna Arin. Make sure to check out her website, annaarin.com. Anna, who has been a huge influence when it comes to your music career? Are there a bunch of artists that have really sort of stoked your fire?
Well, I've always been a very big fan of Sufjan Stevens. I don't know if he's very known around here. He's from Michigan, but works in Brooklyn at the moment. And I don't know, when I'm at home, I listen to a lot of 80s music, like Kate Bush or David Bowie in the 80s, a band called Talk Talk, which I really, really love. But, I mean, that these are just artists that I love listening to. I don't know if they influenced me musically, but I can't say.
Oh, really? That's interesting, because I always find anytime I interview an artist and they tell me who they like, you can kind of maybe sense that. And I could see the David Bowie, I think, in some of your stuff. I think so, definitely. Yeah, I think so. I really think so. And when you said you listened to a lot of 80s stuff, I could see elements of that in your work. I think that's great. I think that's fantastic.
Okay. I'm pleased to hear that.
I wanted to ask you as well, you know, you do live and work in Europe. Do you have any intention ever of wanting to move to North America? Like, is New York like a goal for you, or Los Angeles?
Well, yeah, I'm always kind of telling myself that I'm just too scared. And if I wasn't such a coward, I would just move to States or to Canada or whatever. Because definitely sometimes, especially, you know, the country where I live, Switzerland, it's very small, and also the mentality is very different. So definitely I think about that a lot. I think about moving and maybe I should, and yeah, but I don't have concrete plans at the moment.
And when you are over in home, like in Europe, do you have a lot of support, you know, from your local fans? And is it important for you to travel to other parts of Europe, like Paris and London and all that, those sorts of locations?
Yeah, of course. It's very important. Some cities are very, like Paris in France is very important. Almost all of the promotional work happens there. The shows are very different in Paris than in other towns in France. But I don't have a lot of connection to the local music scene in my town. I just, I don't know why. It's just the way it is.
It's just the way it is. That's okay.
Yeah.
What career objectives do you have for yourself over the next 12 months? Like, I know the album's, fairly new. It's only been a little while that it's been released. Where do you see yourself going? Lots of touring over the next 12 months?
I hope I'll be going back to the studio pretty soon, because I mean, in Europe, the record has been out for a year now.
Okay.
So yeah, and I've been writing new stuff and hope to be able to record that pretty soon.
Is social media very important to you? Do you find it helps with the sort of advancement of your career?
I think my opinion is that it's very important, but I have to admit that I really suck at social media. I'm terrible. I think I was just asked at the Canadian television if I have Instagram, and I don't even know the password. I don't even have access to my account. So it's definitely something that I have to do my homework on.
Yeah, I think it would be great. Especially, I think you'd have a lot of fans that would love to contact you that way. And you know what I find sort of interesting to me is how an artist like Madonna, who's been around forever, she's so active on Instagram. It's sort of inspiring to me that someone at 56 feels the need to be all over her Instagram all the time.
Yeah. It makes sense, though. I mean, she's so big. It makes sense that she would get into that as well.
Do you enjoy communicating with your fans, Anna? Like, does it bring you joy? Does it bring you confidence to keep pushing forward? Because I know, just, you know, I'm a radio announcer, and I don't obviously get as many messages as obviously rock stars would get, but when I get a message here and there, it does, you know, sort of give me a boost and makes me feel good and makes me feel like I'm on the right path. Does that sort of translate to you as well?
Yeah, of course. It really means a lot to me when people write me. Also, talking to people after shows, when they come and say hi, it's always, I think sometimes people are not aware of how much it really means to a musician, you know, to have someone come in and say, hi, I love your music. Sometimes people are kind of timid or they think, well, she doesn't care. She has like hundreds of people who tell her that all the time. But in fact, it's not true. There are not that many people who come to really talk to me. So it means a lot, definitely.
Excellent. Well, we want to wish you all the best of luck, and thank you so much for spending time with us on the show this week.
Thank you for having me. Thanks so much.
That is Swiss artist Anna Aaron. Again, make sure to check out her website, annaaaron.com.
Hey, it's Anna Aaron, and you're hanging out on The Kelly Alexander Show.
Ever since you pressed your bleeding thumb on mine, we said we would be together. Till I ask, what if you
Alexander Show.
We always appreciate you spending time with us on the show each and every week. And as always, a big thank you going out to my guests this week, Deborah Cox, Patrick Lehman, and Anna Aaron. Here is your thought-provoking quote of the week, this time coming from Jean-Bertrand Aristide. If one suffers, we all suffer. Togetherness is strength. Courage. Please make sure to follow us on all of our social media, on Twitter, at @KAlexanderShow, on Instagram, Kelly Alexander Show, on Facebook, Kelly Alexander Show, and of course, our YouTube channel, which features our interviews, youtube.com/KellyAlexanderShow. Have an amazing week. You and I will chat soon.